I think when there are norms that you don't understand, when people are asking you to put people on things, when those things are happening, I really recommend almost dispassionately calling it out exactly for how you see it. So you can ask, am I seeing this right? Or is there something I'm missing about this explicitly? And it will help reveal what the underlying dynamic is. Secondly, I recommend that we really try to avoid the like looking across at like, oh, they've got this little thing, 1-2 punch going, and they're just getting all these papers and I'm left out. I feel like if that's not work you do anyway, if you're not interested in like just jumping on things to jump on things, let them do that. Focus on what you are building and what you are doing, because it's going to have more longevity than a little high five back and forth. You're on my paper, I'm on your paper, because that's not what you came here to do anyway. You didn't come here to rack up papers in terms of quantity and keep it moving. You came here to do real work.
Hello, hello. You are listening to Your Unapologetic Career. Being a woman of color faculty in academic medicine who wants to make a real difference with your career can be tough. Listen, these systems are not built for us, but that doesn't mean we can't make them work for us. In each episode, I'll be taking a deep dive into one core growth strategy so you can gain confidence and effectiveness in pursuing the dream career you worked so hard to achieve. All you have to do is tune in to Your Unapologetic Career with me, your host, Kemi Dole, physician, surgeon, researcher, coach, and career strategist, for an always authentic, sometimes a little raw, but unapologetically empowering word. I keep it real for you because I want you to win. So the truth is, I get messages all the time from people who are like, whoa, 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 this is too good. I definitely want to do more. How can I work with you? Like, where is the front door? And so if that's you and you're a woman of color faculty in academic medicine or public health, just keep listening. The question is, are you building the academic career you want or hard at work checking boxes on everyone else's to-do list? A successful career doing the work that you love doesn't mean you have to sacrifice your values, your family, or your joy. Stop trying to be everything to everybody and get to learning the strategies that will 3x your productivity, hone your passions into grant-funded projects, and create the career you worked so hard to achieve. If you have been to every career development or professional development workshop that sounded great, but didn't actually deal with the kind of institutional pressures you face. If you are working hard, but somehow stuck in inefficiency, putting everyone else's priorities first. If you spent years training and sacrificing to become academic faculty, and here you are, still working when you don't want to be on the projects you care most about, I'm here to tell you that you can walk away from this institutional mindset forever and take control of your career with clarity and strategy. Every day, I help women of color faculty in academic medicine and public health, like you, reframe and recreate their academic life so that they can channel their ideas, passions, and skills into grant-funded work with institutional support. And that is why this episode is brought to you by Get That Grant, our 6-month comprehensive high-performance coaching program for high-achieving women of color faculty in academic medicine and public health who are ready to reclaim career control and secure grant funding doing the work they love. In Get That Grant, we help you kick imposter syndrome to the curb for good so you lead your career with clarity and confidence. We help you learn productivity and strategy skills for grants and papers to maximize your chances of success without wasting your time, abandoning your passion, or working yourself into the ground. We help you build the foundation for an amazing and fulfilling academic career, changing your life and the lives of everyone your work will touch. Yes, this future is possible for you, and it's waiting on you to take the first step. If you are ready for career success without sacrifice, without suffering, then I encourage you to join our waitlist at kemidole.com/grant. After you join the waitlist, you will be notified when the next Get That Grant cohort will be enrolling. Your application process will include an in-depth Career Foundations assessment, helping you identify the gaps in your foundation that are holding you back from enjoying the career you worked so hard to achieve. No more secret worrying that the career you really want isn't really possible. This career assessment will show you exactly where you need to focus to level up your experience and your impact. Join the waitlist today to get in line. Visit kemidole.com/grant to sign up. See you soon.
Hello, hello, folks. Welcome back to the show. I hope you're all doing well. I want to kick us off with a moment of gratitude for somebody who recently left a 5-star review on Apple iTunes for the show. Thank you so much, MRTMD123. First of all, that sounds like something you made up just to be able to leave the review. And if that is correct, I just want to say thank you. Like, that is an even extra level that you're willing to be like, let me just put a username in here so I could publish these words I have to say about this podcast. That means a lot to me. This lovely individual said, "This podcast is exactly the right dose and delivery for those of us navigating life and careers in academia/public health. Thank you, all caps, for putting it out in the world. It is directly making a difference." Thank you so much. I really appreciate this. I appreciate it because words of affirmation are definitely very high on my list of love languages, or whatever you want to call that. Secondly, it really does help people find the show when you all go and rate it 5 stars and leave a text-based review specifically. And it always is shocking to me. I mean, shocking is maybe the wrong word, but I'm always so pleasantly surprised about how new people find the show. I've been doing this podcast for almost 3 years. I think that's right. Yes, almost 3 years. And it's really incredible that, you know, it continues to make its round, that you all continue to appreciate it. You continue to share it with people, and people write me like, "Oh my gosh, I just found your podcast 3 weeks ago. I have listened to 47 episodes. I'm so excited." And I'm like, that's really great. You got 100 more to go. Like, it's just really great. So anyway, so thank you so much. And I know every once in a while the episodes will have like the call to action at the end. That's like, "Hey, can you please rate the podcast and review it?" And I just wanted to shout out somebody who actually went and did that, because it does mean a lot. And I'll just refrain from commenting on the people who feel the need to go and put 1-star reviews. Like, what's wrong with you? Do you need a cookie? Are things unhappy in your home? Why are we doing this? Anyway, today's episode is going to be a little bit more freewheeling, if you can't already tell. I'm freshly back from vacation. I don't know if I should call it a vacation. I'm back from a trip with the children to a nice location. But we had a good time. I soaked up some sun, which always makes me feel better considering that I'm in the Pacific Northwest, big darkness right now. And it's just, there's no warmth. There's no warmth to be found, and there's no sunshine to be found. So it was a nice break. So I thought what I would do is just pull together a few different questions that I've gotten that I'm basically just calling like mini listener letters, because these aren't things that necessarily came through the listener letter inbox, which is podcast@kdolcoach.com, podcast@kdollcoach.com. These didn't come in the form of letters. These came more like, oh, somebody sent me a DM on Instagram, or they sent me a little message on Facebook, or they sent me like a short little email. They're more in that vein, and they're shorter questions. So because they don't have all of like the context that would come in a listener letter, there's only so much I can say about them, but I still think that they're like interesting, kind of like hot topics. So I figure, let's go for it. All right. So the first one was a little note that I got that I just found interesting, because it was like, "Hey, do you think you could like do a quick podcast episode about this?" But the question is how to deal with / approach working with superiors, e.g. department chair, or even coworkers who are hostile / foster toxic working environments, parentheses, i.e. share false accusations about one's actions, intentions, comma, enable environments with no transparency, comma, micromanage and demonstrate lack of trust, etc., close parentheses, period, end of question. Okay, so if you're anything like me, you read this and it's like, it's a big question. It's a short question, but it's a big question. And what struck me the most when I read it was, and I'm reading into all of this. So home person who sent this to me, like, don't take any of this negatively, but it just struck me because it's like, this is really bad. How do I make my productivity a little bit better? How do I figure out how to appropriately triage my email inbox so I'm spending time on messages that matter, but I'm not spending time on messages that don't? Like, this is not about how do I think about like having like a grant submitting season instead of just going one off, so I can like really be efficient about my efforts, maximize my chance of success, but without living like 2-3 years of just like applying and being exhausted by it. Those to me are like your strategic career navigation questions. But what I found so interesting about this question was that it was asked in that same kind of tone, like, hey, how do you go about doing? And the thing that we're going about doing is dealing with / approaching extraordinarily toxic behavior from a leader or coworkers, fostering toxic work environments, sharing false accusations about one's actions. So somebody who is lying on you, lying about you, somebody who is enabling an environment with no transparency, somebody who is micromanaging and demonstrating a lack of trust as a norm. Okay. So I just want us all to be together in that, like, the way that we have normalized, the way that we have just consistently accommodated poor leadership and really poor behavior to a point where we can ask a question like this is part of the primary issue with academic medicine and public health, at least, because those are the areas I talk about. I know it's not limited to those, but like, and our deep lack of training leaders, our deep lack of expecting a certain level of character and behavior from people. I mean, it's ridiculous. Okay, so I'm still going to answer the question though. First of all, I want to say that I'm assuming that this question is coming from a place of relatively less power, right? Because the way somebody's talking about working with superiors, like a department chair, or even coworkers, really sounds to me like this is coming from somebody who does not necessarily feel like they are on equal footing or have the same degree of power or latitude as whoever is behaving this way or creating this environment. So there's so many things that you could approach this with. Like, there's so many things. The first thing I'm going to say is, like, I'm just going to believe you that all this is true, right? I'm not going to be like, well, are you sure? No, I'm just going to say, yes, this sounds toxic AF and this sounds terrible. The second thing is I'm actually just going to jump to the end. So before we start to get into how do you approach or how do you deal with or whatever, let's just jump all the way to the end and say, if you are in an environment, if you are directly under the leadership, in an environment directly under the leadership of someone who is actively fostering toxicity, lying about people, otherwise known as sharing false accusations about one's actions and intentions, somebody who is creating an environment with zero transparency, somebody who is consistently not trustworthy. If you know, my question for us to all ask ourselves is if you knew for sure that person, that behavior, that environment would not change, that would be the norm, and include the good stuff that's included in that environment too, but you know that piece of it is never going to change, how does that shift how you think about how you're going to move? If you know the nidus of the toxicity, the behavior, all of that is never going to change. If you knew that it was never going to change, how would that change how you would approach your navigation through that environment and your ultimate decisions about that environment? Why do I say that? Because before we start getting into how do I deal or approach the situation, you have to get into what is your goal here? Like, what is the long-term goal? You have to be able to ask yourself, if I know this is never going to change, am I still here? Am I still in this environment for the long term? That answer might be yes for a lot of reasons. It might be like, yes, because this is like 10% pain, but 90% of the rest of my position is great. I'm definitely not leaving over that. Or it might be different. It might be, wait a minute, I've just been assuming this will get better. I've been assuming there's something I can do to make this better. But if you're saying that there's nothing I can do to make this better, even though I don't even want to think about it, even though it sounds terrifying to me, I need to start thinking about how I'm getting the hell out of here. I need to start deconstructing a whole bunch of things in my mind if you're saying this is never going to change. So that really matters, because that is going to in part dictate how you move. Not completely, but like, you should have clarity around the answer to that question. it will help you with all the intermediate decisions along the way. So the way that I would think about this is, first, I would do kind of a power analysis, and I would think about what power, what consequences, what influence does this person have specifically over my career? So that means like the experience I have day to day, the decisions that I make, what I have access to, what I don't have access to, et cetera, et cetera. I say that because sometimes what we can do is, because somebody is unpleasant, toxic, whatever, you know, somebody is like that and they're in our environment, sometimes we can take that on as like they're controlling us. And that's not always true. It can be every time I'm around this person, I justifiably feel like violence. Like, it could be that. And I get that. But that's different from, this person controls my schedule. This person determines whether or not I'm on call. This person determines whether I get access to research funds or not. Those are two different things. Both of the things are obviously possible. Both of them exist. I have worked with many faculty in both of those situations, but clarify for yourself which one you're in. Because if it's a question of, this is deeply annoying and it kind of poisons the environment, it's really frustrating, but it doesn't actually dictate my decisions and my resources, then we're going to go down more of a path of the degree to which you're interested in you yourself trying to instigate change, etc. The degree to which whatever might be connected, even if it's only 10% of the work that you do or whatever, to this person or to this environment, how do you try to move around that or shift where those resources live or whatever? Like, we basically get into like mitigation strategies in terms of this, wherever the toxicity lives, disrupting your day to day, right? That's when we're in the category where there's not actually control over your decisions. When you're in the category of, oh, no. This person is my direct superior that decides whether things go down well or not in my career, period. Then I think we have to shift the conversation. And it's not that you're not addressing and saying, hey, I didn't appreciate this, or I didn't understand this, or can you explain better like why you would have said this when it's clearly not true? Like, yes, all of those quote unquote crucial conversations are still going to happen. But the other thing that's going to happen is you actually have to go through a process where you find out exactly what types of actions, what types of things are going to be the consequences of you not accepting that behavior. Because another thing we can do is be like, this person is like this, like this, like this. So if I ask for X, I'm going to be in trouble, or Y, I'm going to be in trouble. I don't know if it's true or not, but even thinking that way can lead people not to take any action, not to ask at all, not to push at all. And I'm like, well, then we have no information. We just have your fear, but we have no information. So if this is a situation where this person, or this, wherever this toxicity lives, directly impacts what you can access, how you can move, like the decisions that you can make for yourself or against yourself in your career, I ask you again, one, if they're never going to change, are you going to be there forever? What's the plan if they never change? If you knew that, what kinds of things would you start doing to shift where you do your work, how you do your work, whatever? Just asking. Would it be that you're leaving, or would it be that, no, I'm not leaving. I cannot leave. Cannot is usually not true, but that's okay. But even if it's right now. So if I cannot leave, this is what I'm going to do differently, because I refuse to just have a terrible experience because nobody will deal with this person. But in addition to that, so you're going to need to know that. But one of the ways along the way for some people to be able to figure that out is to actually advocate for the change they're looking for, or confront the person about their behavior, or speak very specifically about, this is not working for me because X. It's not working for me for you to insinuate lies about me because Y. Oh, it wasn't a lie. Whatever. Okay, whatever the reason, that's not going to work for me. Can we talk about how this will never happen again? And what needs to happen? Like, you're going to have that conversation, because you're going to need to find out, is there any room for awareness, growth, and moving forward or not? And there might be. I have a dear friend who's constantly telling me to consider multiple perspectives, and I appreciate her. And I always want to consider multiple perspectives. As a leader myself, I know how it feels for somebody to kind of assume, like, for somebody to, whether even if it's in a slight way or a more aggressive way, kind of assume negative intent of your actions, or assume, almost like assume the worst of your actions, or give you no space to be a human. like no space to be having a bad day, no space to be like, okay, I'm maybe not going to be the most warm and fuzzy person that ever walked the planet today, right? So I know what it's like on the leader side to have somebody kind of not take a step back and be curious instead of automatically assuming negative intent, which is why I want to leave space to say a conversation, a confrontation that is like, hey, explain why you did this or why this is happening or whatever, can be helpful to make sure that there isn't a perspective you're just not considering. But again, I believe you. This person is toxic. The question is, will they be able to change or shift with actual conversation? And that has to happen. Now, what happens before that? Girl, you got to talk to your friends. You got to role play a little bit. Maybe you want to get information from other folks. Like, are you experiencing this the same way as me, as me, as me, right? You want to think about what other colleagues or allies do you have that are outside of that chain of command that can give you some insight either into that person or into the specific. Like, the point is you want to triangulate beyond your own perception. But once you've done that, then you got to take some action to find out, is this actually changeable? Can anything change here or not? And sometimes what changes is you remove yourself from the environment. Does it have to be that my research is based here? Maybe not. Maybe let me think about this. Why am I so sure that I can't go anywhere? Or the person or the behavior actually shifts. Okay, we had a conversation or we came together as a group. We're not doing this anymore. We're going to have new community standards and it's going to shift. So it's only like three really, like, how do you deal with hostile coworkers or superiors who foster toxic working environments? Three ways. One, you remove yourself from the situation. Two, you confront the situation and demand change. And three, you find out whether change is going to happen or whether you are going to go. And if you find out change is not going to happen, you go back to one and say, okay, so what am I going to do differently so I can have happiness and joy in my life? Or you bounce because you're like, this is not worth it and this is not my only opportunity. Okay, that was very high level because, again, there's not a lot of specifics. But I just wanted to point out that the biggest takeaway I have from this question is, like, let's not approach this like a generic strategy question about productivity or about wording an email. This is like a much bigger question about how do we move in environments, not just that are, quote, not made for us, but like that are actually unhealthy. How do we move in an environment where actually, like, if I stay here longer, I will suffer. Like, my joy, my spirit, myself will suffer because there is toxicity afoot. Usually in those kind of environments, you're not the only person who sees the problem. But also, unfortunately, and maybe especially if you listen to my podcast, I don't know. Maybe especially if you're a Black woman in academic medicine, I don't know. Even though you're not the only person feeling it, even though you're not the only person seeing it, you might be the only person to say something. You might be the only person who's willing to be like, so this is really effed up. We don't need to be treated this way. And part of my questions at the top is helping you think about, if I'm going to be asking those questions, if I'm going to be pointing that out, to what end? Where do my vulnerabilities sit here? Where do my options sit here? And then let me move forward with awareness of that. Okay, let's go on to the next topic. Next. This one was kind of interesting. Okay, so this is the message. First, thank you for what you are doing for women of color faculty. You're welcome. I have loved listening to your podcast. The truth and wisdom you share is gold. I would love to hear a podcast on authorship and how women of color are left out, as well as how there can be pressure for them to dilute their authorship. I've also had the experience where white women faculty will promote each other by agreeing to put each other on their papers, deserved or not. And of course, that puts women of color at a disadvantage. Thank you again for all that you do. Okay, so thank you for writing me this message. I really appreciate it. I found it so fascinating. A few things. I feel like we should establish that, like, I'm not sure exactly what the literature is, but I know at least in the gender, looking at gender, like, it's just a fact that, like, women are left off papers, women are less often first authors. Like, this is like a fact. So, of course, just by extension of intersectionality and how we know how this, like, racist patriarchy works, of course, women of color would be even lower on that rung in terms of being left off of authorship and left out of things and things like that. So I want to make it clear that, like, from a systematic level, I have no doubt that there are deep inequities in authorship and credit when it comes to women of color in the academy. Like, that's why the whole Cite Black Women hashtag took off, just because of like how common this issue is. So I'm gonna park that. Okay, that's for sure. Number two, authorship practices among different partners and among different groups vary widely. I think it's really important, and I didn't see that in this admittedly brief message of understanding that, like, you might be in an environment where the way that authorship works is just like 100% based on people's collegial connections that you are left out of as maybe the only woman of color, maybe the only Black woman for whatever reason. So you don't have access to that. But the primary currency is the collegiality or the commonality of topic. And like in a different space, it would look completely different and you would be on the inside and somebody else would be on the outside. All I'm saying is that these like authorship patterns and how people move around those are, I have found them to vary widely and be honestly odd and strange depending on where you are. Now, let's acknowledge that if you read the journals and if you read all of that, they actually make it very clear. This is the criteria for authorship. This is what everybody should meet, whatever, whatever, whatever. Now, we know the difference between what is quote unquote clear and written and what people actually do in academia, but I want to acknowledge that that is also the case. Okay. I really like strongly recommend to any faculty we work with, anybody, any mentee I come across, any colleague, is like the very first thing after we establish, oh yes, we're going to work on this together or you're going to be involved, is like the very first thing we talk about is authorship. How many papers are coming out of this? What does the authorship look like? What does the authorship, like, that's one of the earliest conversations explicit that we are having, okay? So that helps me get out of a space where I am worried about whether I'm included or not, or where I'm included or not. Like, I'm not worried about any of that. The second thing I want to say is that there's kind of two different issues, two different things being raised by this comment. One is pressure to, quote, dilute your authorship. And then a second one is if everybody's agreeing to put their friends on papers, but I'm not considered a friend, I'm automatically out of that pool. And therefore, my publication record might look smaller or shorter than somebody else, even though we are theoretically like doing the same amount of work. I really see those as two different things. So to beginning this question of like pressure to dilute their authorship, I would just say that I do think that that comes back to the microenvironment of the research group and space, as well as the norms of the field, where like you might have written a commentary or something, but like you're in a field where, girl, the commentary is not getting published without a junior and a senior author. So who is the senior author that you're going to get some input on that you're going to throw on here to be a part of it? I don't know if that could be the quote unquote dilution to which you're being referred, which is like part of the norm, whatever. Whether it's that or whether it's something else, whether it's like, well, three people here worked on this, but in this research group, everybody is on every paper. I've seen that too. Like, doesn't matter what, everybody's just on every paper. No matter what it is, I think there's a few things to recognize. One is it reciprocal? Is the question of, oh, add this person, let them read it, give comments and add them as an author, whatever. Is that reciprocal? Are you also being asked the same thing for other people to get on other people's papers? If it's reciprocal, then you can just approach it from a, do I want to participate in this or not, right? Even if it's reciprocal and it's like, oh, this is just what we do, it's all reciprocal, you can still be like, okay, that's great, but I don't want to participate in this. I am just going to move the way that I'm going to move, and my, don't ask me to be put on your stuff. I'm not going to be putting you on my stuff. I'm out here. And then you need to ask yourself, like, does that make sense for you? Is that worth it for you? Do all the things line up to make it that that is the best move for you going forward? It might very well be, but it's a question to ask to be clear about doing something like that. So you can always opt out of the culture, assuming it's reciprocal, meaning that it's like theoretically equitable, but you still don't have to do it. Secondly, if it's not, if it's like, wait, the dilution is put all these people on my paper, but nobody's asking me, nobody's throwing me on their papers, then you're dealing with a separate issue, which I would just say the authorship is just a symptom of, because the actual issue is we don't have reciprocity here. We have a problem with how we are doling out or how we are managing something, a very valuable resource, i.e. authorship. Okay. And so that to me is really addressing another issue. So that's where my curiosity went. My curiosity went like, is this just because it's your paper? Is this just because it's the micro environment and like we put the senior authors on the paper? Is it just nobody's being asked to put anybody on papers except me alone? In which case there's a conversation to be had there. Explain to me why XYZ. To get to the root of all of that, I just so encourage the most explicit conversation possible, because a lot of times with norms, especially norms that might be like skirting the rules a little bit, to be honest, right? Norms that are like a little like, wait, can we really just put everybody on everything type thing? I really encourage like explicitly calling it what it is to have the conversation. So this is not an accusatory call it what it is. This is, I'm just trying to make sure that I understand correctly what's happening here. So you are asking me to put A, B, and C on the paper, even though they are not meeting authorship criteria, except that they might do like a review and give me like one edit. Because in this environment, the expectation is that everybody is doing that with everybody's paper. Is that how it works? Like, I would just be so explicit about it so that it can't be like hand waved off. And whatever the answer to your question is, we'll give you information. When you're that explicit, when you really lay it out, you will get the information you're looking for back about like what exactly is the situation here in terms of how you all are stylizing the authorship. That's one thing. Okay. I'm assuming, because I feel like I have to have all these caveats, that what's not happening is something like, this is a really good paper, but I think this person would strengthen it. I think that they have input and edits and additions and things that would make it better. Because to me, I wouldn't call that diluting. I would call that somebody's asking you to collaborate with somebody, and then you're just deciding whether or not you want to collaborate or not. I really keyed in on the word dilution as indicating a very little contribution effort in exchange for the authorship. Okay, second topic in this comment is this whole thing about, well, if all these folks are agreeing to be on each other's papers, it puts women of color at a disadvantage. Okay. So again, I'm going to remind you at the top of what I said, which is that like systematically, structurally, I have no question in my mind that there is a publication inequity for women of color, just because we know there's a publication inequity for women and men writ large in academia, which if you're saying that, you're mostly talking about white women and white men because academia is so white. So like that's clear. So if you're going to add intersection to that, I know women of color are going to be even lower. So I'm clear on that structurally. And what you're describing, where it's like faculty will promote each other by agreeing to put each other on other papers, I see that among lots of different kinds of people. And I see that among white women, white men, women of color, men of color, across all, like that as a behavior I see pop up in a lot of places. In a lot of places. Personally, I think it's a terrible idea because personally, I think the way that papers should work, obviously, in addition to the ethical sides of it, is that you should develop these wonderful collaborative partnerships that can and do result in a plethora of publications that you get to be a part of, because at the root of it is a real partnership and collaboration that keeps giving, like the gift that keeps on giving. So by the time you are 5 years, 10 years into that collaboration, yeah, you've accumulated a lot of papers that you have contributed to because you helped build something together or something like that, right? So that's really what that should be representing. But if you're asking, are there places where it's like this kind of quid pro quo, like, you know, you do this one, I'll put you on, da da da. Of course that happens. And might that be more common among folks that are, you know, naturally more quote unquote friendly, collegiate, whatever? Yes, that's also possible. My whole approach though to that is like, do you want to be involved in that kind of quid pro quo stuff? Or are you interested in getting your work done, publishing your work, including people that matter, thinking about who are strategic partners, who's somebody who's like, you know what, this would be an amazing person that can give me a great perspective on this paper, even though it's almost done. I would love to add them as an author. They can give me a read through. They can give me their thoughts. And that sets me up great for the next level, because next after this, I want to propose that we collaborate on something else. And this will be a great test for how that could look. You want it to be like that. That's how you're making your authorship decisions. That's how you're figuring that out. So it kind of goes back to what I was talking about the opt-out, is like, instead of the focus being on what do we do, like potentially the white women are getting together and putting each other on everybody's papers and like women are colored being left out. I'm like, is that the behavior we want to emulate? I don't think so. I think the behavior we want to emulate is what it looks like to create meaningful research partnerships and have those be fruitful and productive and being able to see the fruits of all of that continuing on and on and on. And then modeling that for other people. So then they understand, oh, I see how all of this was built. And then they get excited about going to build those kind of partnerships. So
that is what I think about the question of women of color faculty and authorship. I think when there are norms that you don't understand, when people are asking you to put people on things, when those things are happening, I really recommend almost dispassionately calling it out exactly for how you see it. So you can ask, am I seeing this right? Or is there something I'm missing about this explicitly? And it will help reveal what the underlying dynamic is. Secondly, I recommend that we really try to avoid the like looking across at like, oh, they've got this little thing, 1-2 punch going and they're just getting all these papers and I'm left out. I feel like if that's not work you do anyway, if you're not interested in like just jumping on things to jump on things, let them do that. Focus on what you are building and what you are doing, because it's going to have more longevity than a little high five back and forth. You're on my paper, I'm on your paper, because that's not what you came here to do anyway. You didn't come here to rack up papers in terms of quantity and keep it moving. You came here to do real work. And when you focus and when you do real work, it might take longer at the beginning. It might be slower at the beginning. The publication count might not be the same at the beginning, but by virtue of doing work that matters, that you are really connected to, that you are really thoughtful about, reaching out for partnerships that mean something, you will create the kind of momentum that results in retrospect in the papers flowing out, assuming that you got your productivity and all that stuff on deck, on lock. And so you won't need the other distraction. Okay, those are my thoughts on that. We're at 35 minutes. I feel like we can call it there. I will talk to y'all about the last comment on another loosey-goosey Kemi answers a bunch of random comments that came in through different pathways. This was just a little bit of a teaser. You can see now how much more I can do if y'all give me a little bit more detail about like what your circumstance, what your situation is. You can be, believe me, I will keep these anonymous. I am very good at doing that. I will give you a fake name. We'll change the geography. But like, go ahead and roll through the podcast inbox, podcast@kdolecoach.com. And let me know what's going on and what questions you have. And we can dig in. We can dig in and get into the juiciness of your circumstance. And without a doubt, not just help you, but help others. All right, y'all. That's it for this week. Come and find me on all the socials. I'm at Kemi Doll, my government name, KemiDoll, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, but I never check that inbox, so please don't message me on there because I will literally see it next year. And if you have a topic or suggestion for the podcast, shoot us an email at podcast@kdollcoach.com, KDOLLCOACH.com. And we'll pick it up, read it aloud on the show, and go from there. I might even invite you as a guest to chit-chat about it. I mean, if you want to come on, right? We're in year 3. Might as well mix it up. All right. Take care, y'all. I love you and I mean it.
Thank you so much for listening with me today. I appreciate your time, as I know it's so valuable. I hope this episode was helpful to you, and I hope you feel energized to go out and claim your unapologetic career. See you soon.